truth is, I didn't think that Rabbi Sheinfeld was going to be here at this time. I thought he wasn't going to be here at this moment. So this does have a lot of shaykhs to him. So you can fact check me after if something that I said was a little bit wrong. But we went as a family to the Museum of Science and Industry over Chol HaMoed Pesach. So if you know anything about Chicago and the Museum of Science and Industry and anything about Chol HaMoed, you know that the Museum of Science and Industry is the place where they all hang out. Where they, I mean, is by every Jewish family. At some point in time is going to go there. If it's a free day, don't even bother going. Don't even bother going. If you know Jews the way I do, and I think you do, right? This is sort of the thing to do. It's there. So we decided while we were there that we would watch the IMAX film on the U.S. parks, which I couldn't think of a better usage of my time. And I thought to myself that if there was any time for me to learn about the U.S. parks, this would be the perfect time for it. Now, this ended up being a 45-minute infomercial entirely about U.S. parks and how we should love trees and nature and wind and sun and mountains and everything else that the U.S. parks have to offer. Apparently, there were no animals, but there is lots of dead things, and it was nice. It was good. What was even better is that the theater was almost entirely Jewish. When I say almost entirely Jewish, I mean 98% Jewish. There was maybe a couple non-Jews who found their way in there because they didn't realize that it was Jew Day on that day, and the person who was playing the film, right, and the person who was on the bottom introducing the film were not Jewish. Aside from that, the entire thing, and Rabbi Sheinfeld happened to be sitting right behind me, so again, you can fact check everything there that this is what happens. So as most of you know, and I know not everybody knows, my son Noah has a leg issue, and he's in braces most of the day during these braces that keep his legs apart almost all the whole day through. So he's in a wheelchair, especially when we go in a place like the industry where you're going to have to be walking most of the time. So he's sitting in a wheelchair most of the time. So we get all this preferential treatment, and we go up elevators and down elevators instead of going down escalators and things like that. We milk it for all it's worth, because that's, again, what Jews are like. So we took the regular elevator, and we took the elevator up to the regular place, and we sat, and we saw that there was a little area that they had just marked off for wheelchairs. But Nochi doesn't like being in a wheelchair, as no kid under the age of 10 does. So he said to me, can I just sit in a regular chair? I said, yeah, 100%. So we found a place, we kicked out some Jews, and we sat him down, like, right there. But we kept his wheelchair where the regular wheelchair sits. We just went in the regular seating and everything like that. So we sat, and Nochi was at the end, and then me, and then my other kids, and my wife, and that was that. When the film starts and we're all excited and it gets dark in the theater and everything's there, so then some Jewish lady who clearly had lost her family, and I'm not so sure she was so upset about it, she comes inside and she starts like looking around to see where her family was. Now, it was extremely dark in the theater. There wasn't that much light, and you could see because the movie is still, you know, the movie is still showing, but it was dark enough that you couldn't see what was going on so far. So she did like a half-hearted attempt to go find her family, but she was sort of like, okay, I don't know, you know, I don't have to be around them. So she like looked around, didn't see anything, whatever it is, and all she sees in front of her is this wheelchair. So she sits down in the wheelchair. Now, I'm sitting there less than 10 feet away, and I look over, and I see her sitting down in the wheelchair, and I'm like, all right, I mean, I guess that's not so bad, a kid's wheelchair and a lady, you know? So it's, I guess, not the worst thing in the world. But it was more than that. Not only did she sit down in the wheelchair, she starts adjusting the wheelchair. That would be better for her. And then the leg rest, if you've seen Noki in his wheelchair, he has the leg rest up, because he has to have his feet up at all times with his little brace. Right? The leg rests are up. She takes her legs, puts them right up on top of the leg rest, and starts moving around the little things in order to make sure that they're perfect for her position. So I'm sitting there, and I start cracking up. I can't stop laughing, because who would do that to a wheelchair? Why would someone do that? And of course, our disciples right there, honey, he's very serious. Like, you should go kick her out. I'm like, I didn't know what to do. I think it was more the shock value than it was anything else, and the fact that as I was watching this, I was like, schmooze material right then, that really sat there, and I said to myself, this is unbelievable, I can't believe this is actually happening to me, right, when this right there. So she gets herself all nice and comfortable, puts her legs up, and leans back, and basically falls asleep. Now, I don't blame her for this, right, I'm just saying, this is really what happened over here. And then I start thinking to myself, after the laughter dies down and I'm looking at beautiful parks in front of me, I'm thinking to myself, what if the wheelchair breaks? I don't know if this can hold a lady that's sitting inside there. I know it can hold my kid. My kid weighs, I don't know, 63 pounds. I don't know if it can hold a lady who I'm sure says she weighs 63 pounds, but probably doesn't weigh 63 pounds. Is this going to work? And the leg rests is what I was really worried about. Those things have to stay up. How do I know that those are going to stay up when she's leaning her leg down? And there's a good possibility something's going to break. But I didn't want to say anything because then it was already in back up. So into the movie. How could I stop? You know, these things are absolutely amazing. And the U.S. parks are the greatest things in the world. And I can't stop thinking. Eventually, the theater lit up a little bit more. And there was like lights that went on the side. And she woke up a little bit. And she looked around and saw that 5 feet away from her is a kid in a massive leg brace. And she looks, and then she does a double take. And I'm looking out of the corner of my eye, and she, like, looks down, sees she's in a wheelchair, and she's just like, ugh, that, you know, figures it all out. So she gets up, right, and sort of, like, maneuvers around, whatever. It's her kids end up finding her, because, again, you have that many Jews in a movie theater, no one's staying in place. So the kids end up finding her, and they start running around. She's like, oh, no, don't go in the wheelchair. It belongs to that little boy, right? And that was pretty much it, I thought, right? So she comes up to my wife later on and apologizes, and she says she had no idea that the chair belonged to anyone. She just sort of assumed it was an open seat, because that's what wheelchairs are, whatever they are. And that was pretty much the most ridiculous thing that I've ever heard anyone say in my life. But that was sort of like the excuse of where it went. So I thought about it afterwards. I am not going to judge this lady at all. And the reason why I'm not going to judge her is because my assumption is that she just made a Pesach Seder, two Pesach Sederim, for her family, which likely was a big family. And aside from that, Chol HaMoed is not the easiest time to be able to do anything. And to bring your entire family to a museum and run around, I don't know what she was doing when the movie was starting. I guarantee you she was either cleaning a kid or finding a kid or losing a kid or something like that, because that's what happens. It's exhausting. Chol HaMoed is exhausting. The museum is exhausting. I'm totally okay with what happened there. So at the end of the day, there's no blame. But let's assume for a second that this wasn't Jew Day and that the wheelchair had been owned by somebody who wasn't Jewish. What would somebody who wasn't Jewish think when a person just plops themselves down in their wheelchair and starts fiddling with the leg rests? What would you think, right, if you saw somebody do that who, you know, is a little strange? What would you say when something like that happens? Imagine if she would have broken something. If she would have broken one of the leg rests, or if one of the parts would have fallen off the wheelchair, then what? Then what would my reaction be? I understand what my reaction is now, because nothing happened. At the end of the day, what's the big deal, right? To give a Jewish lady a little bit of rest on a wheelchair that's comfortable, I'm totally okay with it, right? But at the end of the day, what if something would have happened? Would my reaction be the same? Would this smooth be all about how Jews are evil? Is that what this would be all about? So that was my reaction to it. And the way I want to take this, I want to bring this a little to a different area, that maybe we can get from. You have to be mindful of all times where you are, what you're doing, and what people are looking at you and what they expect from you. You can't just go into something and expect everything to be whatever I need, whatever I want is just going to happen. Like walk into a room and see a chair and say, that chair is certainly made for me. Some people have this ability. Now, this is not on her. I'm just saying there are some people who mamish think, I'm a Jew, I keep the Torah, I daven and do mitzvos. So everything in this world was made purely for me. So if I need something or want something, then I should go get it. And it's mine for the taking. And whether hashkafically that is true or not, that's another discussion for right now. Perhaps there is, and it's likely, that things in this world have been created for us. But you can't go in, a person can't go in with the attitude that that's true. An attitude of that the world was created only for me. Bishvili nivra olam is an idea to help you bring yourself up to give you that gatlus ha'adam, to make you feel better about yourself, in order to give you confidence to do the right thing. But it doesn't give you carte blanche, the idea that you can do whatever you want, and assume that everybody's just going to give in to you and to do whatever you want from them. You can't walk into a movie theater and sit down inside of a wheelchair, and that's just a muscle for other things that you might do. You can't just walk into a store and assume that the people are just going to help you because I keep mitzvos. I do the right thing. I'm an Orthodox Jew. The whole world is really about me. You can't do that. Especially if you're a Jew wearing a kippah with tzitzis on, whether they're out or not. Whether you have a sefer in your hands or a sphere of beard on. Just remember, people are looking at you. They're looking up to you. And they want to look up to you. They want to see you as a person that is impressionable, that is able to show them how to live their lives. A moral, upstanding, a good life. They want to see you that way. And you can either give them that impression, or you can give them the impression that you are aloof. You do your own thing. You have no shaykes to them whatsoever. And that's the difference between a kiddush shem and a chilul Hashem. You probably will never know how other people are looking at you and whether they're looking at you. Maybe, at the end of the day, after everything's said and done, maybe you'll have an inkling. Maybe somebody will say something to you. I just want you to know I've been watching you for the last 10 minutes. I just want you to know I've been very impressed with your attitude, with the way you handle things. Maybe somebody will say that to you. Maybe somebody will go up to you a little bit later on and say, hey, you know, I just want you to know I didn't agree with how you acted back there. Maybe you'll have that, and then you'll know if you made a kiddush shem or a chilul Hashem. But 99% of the time, you will have no idea. You'll have absolutely no idea that when you are arguing with the stewardess on your flight, that other people were watching and saying, huh, that's how an Orthodox Jew acts. Or when you're sitting there and you're at a store and you're trying to return something which clearly you used, right? But the person is saying, well, I don't know if he ever yet. And you're getting the argument in with that person where the people that are standing in back of you in line are saying, what's wrong with this guy? Why would this guy do it? I expect more out of this person. You probably will never know. You'll have absolutely no idea. This is the purpose of being in yeshiva during the summer's month. Summer's month is a very, very short month. Especially in a yeshiva like ours, where Shavuos is 6 weeks away, and then this month ends a week after that. Obviously, it would be better if we went to Shiva to the Tammuz up until Tisha B'Av, into the middle of August. But we don't. We don't. We're going to be ending in mid-June, like we usually do, June 20th or June 19th, whenever it is. And then we have the rest of the summer. And this is short. Pesach is later this year because of the Novi Yor. And it's short. It's 7 weeks. And now, less than 7 weeks, until the very, very end. Our goals have to be simple. You should not have a goal of finishing a full Masechta. You could do it. It's possible. But if the goal is unattainable, if it's not possible for you to do, that shouldn't be what you're concentrating on. You should look at this month as an opportunity to finish a few Masechtas of Mishnayos, maybe. Maybe you could do that. Maybe to understand two or three sugyas in Ian. To get two or three sugyas down. And when somebody asks you a kasha on this sugya, you'll be the person that can answer that question. To get used to doing Shnai Mikra Vatatargum every week. That it no longer is a challenge. You have times where you can finish Shnai Mikra Vatatargum. Another type of goal would be fully understanding a parak in Navi, a sefer in Navi, or even a sefer in Musar, to be able to finish it up over the next couple weeks. You have these ideas in which you can go through. You can go through a siman in Shulchan Aruch and understand it so fully, so thoroughly, and try to get it down so that you could answer everything. It might only be one siman. It might only be one Masechta of Mishnayos. It might only be you're doing Shnai Mikra Vatatargum, but you should get yourself with goals that are easily attainable. And 6.5 weeks worth, you'll be able to finish it easily. And if you have a little bit of an issue, don't worry. At the end of this month, you have Shavuos. You have Shavuot sitting there at the end. You have 2 days. 2 days. And it's not that many hours. Unfortunately, the night is only 4.5 to 5 hours long at the most. But you have 2 days to sit there and to finish up anything or to chaser everything that you've been able to do. But more than that, those are attainable goals, and that's the way that I want people to be thinking of what this man represents. But I want it to be something a little bit more. This is a zman for thinking, for considering where you are and where you want to be. So think about this for a second and allow yourself to sit there and say to yourself, what do you want to accomplish in yeshiva? What do you have in your mind as to what yeshiva is all about? What do you want to do with it? And life, where do you want your life to be in a couple years from now, a couple months from now? What do you want it to be like? Some of you are no longer going to be here after the summer. I mean that in a better way than the way it sounded. I don't mean you're going to be gone. You're not going to be in full-time yeshiva. Some of you are not going to be there. So what are you going to do? How are you going to set yourself up for the business world where you can't sit in yeshiva all day long? Where you can't just give the excuse of, I had a headache, and get out of yeshiva? I mean, work. What are you going to do? What's your life going to be like? Meaning, start putting in your head how I'm going to act during a certain amount of time, a zman, so to speak. And it's even better this year. I don't think I've ever had a zman like this. I've been here for a while. I don't think I've had a zman like this, where you're literally counting down to the end of the zman. That's what you're doing. You see it happening. Okay, so granted, you're counting up. But regardless, it's an idea. You're sitting there. You know how many days are left. You know. You just have to add a week on to everything. And that's it. It's an amazing type of mind in that way. So I want to leave you with questions that I want you to consider to think about. Yes, I want you to be working on your learning and your Ian to get down the sugyas that you need to get down. To work on your bikiyas to finish a parak or two. To get down your chumash or your mishnayas or your navi or halacha. Anything else that you want to work on, of course. Those are all there. But to start using your bina sdarim correctly as well. Benetzar should not be mindless games or taking your mind out of it by doing things that will not allow you to think. I want your Bena Sarim to be filled with thoughts of just walking around. It's basically Chicago summer, which means freezing cold one day and warm the next. I want you to walk around, take a little walk, and start thinking to yourself, what am I going to do when a woman puts her hand out in front of me and wants to shake my hand? Am I going to take it? Or am I not going to take it? Does it matter if she's good looking or if she's not good looking? Does it matter if it's in business or if it's just on the street? What am I going to do? This is not an answer. I'm not answering this for you. You think to yourself, what's going to happen when that comes up? What do I do when someone who is not straight comes up to me and asks me what I think about his lifestyle? How am I going to react? What am I going to do? Does it matter if it's family versus someone just down on the street? What are you going to do with that? Do you know that when I was in the mall, this Gurney Mills Mall, I don't remember, last week sometime, I'm walking around and a guy comes up to me with a little earring in his ear. I remember, forget which ear is the one that's the bad one. Right? He comes up to me and says, can I ask you some questions for a survey about homosexuality? And I said, thank you so much. I'm with my kids right now. That happened to me in a mall. In a mall. Like, why should that happen? But it could. And then what are you going to react? I had my kids. Unless you guys have kids that I don't know about, that's not going to be your excuse. So what's going to happen at that point? These are thought processes. What are you going to do? What's the idea? What am I going to say to a person like that? Or can I say something to that person? Should I say something to that person? Or should I just let it be? What's the real issue with a person like Mr. Donald Trump? Although he probably wouldn't go by Mr. because he feels that Donald is another second name. Right? What would somebody like that, is that a good thing or a bad thing to have a presidency with him? Can that be a good thing? Is there something positive that come out? To be able to think to yourself, what does it mean, Lev Malachim V'yad Hashem, that the heart of a king is in the hands of a Kadosh Baruch Hu to decide what to really do, that it's really truly in a Kadosh Baruch Hu's hands. What do we do with a person like this? With a person whose midos are clearly of a different caliber than most human beings, but has definite ideas on how to run a country and how to do things and is a very successful person, what do you do? What would that Torah say about these types of things? What would they say about these types of ideas? See, these are things that you should just be thinking about. To allow yourself, to give yourself a little bit of extra time. It's difficult, those who are taking classes during this month. if you're taking classes, it's difficult. You're not going to have that much time that's open in the middle of the week. Not as much as you might have had beforehand. Because the classes are crammed in together. It's 7 weeks of smaller classes. It's difficult. That happens to be. But you do have Bena Thurim. You have a longer breakfast, a longer lunch. So you'll just sit there and think to yourself, not to waste your time, but sit there and think to yourself, what should I be doing? What if this would happen? Start considering all options that go through. This is a Zman that can give you a total different way of thinking, a total different methodology than what you've been used to or what you've had up until this point. And it really is something where, listen, this is what life is. Life is about adjustments. How are you going to adjust to what you've done and to where you'll be? What's going to be with what you do? They say the greatest coaches in any sports are not the people that prepare their players for the game that they're playing, but the coaches that are able to adjust the best in the middle of the game to go off their game plan when something goes wrong. Because if you have a game plan, and the other team game planned for your game plan, and they already had in mind what they were going to do, if you do this, this is what we're going to do. Are you going to be willing to go off your game plan to readjust, to understand what to do now that this situation has come up? And sometimes when you think through a situation before you're ever into it, you think through what you would do or how you'd react or things like that, that makes things a lot easier. Makes things a lot easier to be able to go through. If you're wondering why you're here in the first place, why you're involved in a yeshiva, or why you're involved in this yeshiva, this is the perfect time to think about it, to consider where your options are, why your options led you to this, and what you can do to make it something better for you, to make it a stronger Zman or a stronger place for everyone. And that really goes for everybody together, to bring that Achdus together, to make everyone think that we can do this along with somebody else. Maybe somebody else isn't having an easy time, but if I go up to him and I talk to him, or if I give him a suggestion, or I say something to him, maybe that will help him to make it a little bit easier for him. That goes for newer people or older people. Whoever it is, everybody can help with this. Otherwise, who knows? Maybe you'll find yourself in a dark room and you can't find a chair, and all you got is a wheelchair in front of you, and you'll just assume that this chair was just put there for you. It's something that you have to consider. And sometimes the wheelchair is put there for you. You have to consider, what are the options? What are the things in front of you? And to use this, not just this Zman, but really, I really mean it by Bena Thurim, and to use it as a springboard into Bena Zman, into after, when we're done with morning Seder and afternoon Seder, to use this to be able to get into a better schedule, a better mode of thinking, a better way of life, and to adjust yourself into the new role that you have put yourself into. Allow that to be, to change that method just a little bit, and use us, and ask us questions, and allow us to help you find what's the best place for you. All right, everyone.